Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of July 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Steve Platt with Archer Financial Services will be here to take up the agricultural energies. We'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And along the way, we'll get an update of crop progress and conditions from the state statisticians in Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Missouri. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check in at the CME Group this afternoon, where futures in the corn pit finished 9.5 cents lower at $4.24 for the day. The September contract at 4.28 and a quarter, down 12.5, and December futures down 13 and 4.38 and three quarters. March contract at 4.49, down 12 and three quarters, and July corn at 12.5 lower, finished $4.57 and a half. Soy complex, July beans down 6 and a quarter, $10.39. The settlement price, they went all the way to 10.60. August 10.33 and a half, down 4, and November beans down 3.5 cents at $10.25. They went to 10.45 for their high for the day. The January 10.31 and a quarter, down 3 and a quarter cents. Bean meal up $6.80 on the day at 374.80. The bean oil at 32.32, 33 cents lower. Chicago soft red winter wheat at 583.5, down 3 and a quarter. The hard red at 550, down 8 cents. Those are both in the July contract. The September's will be the lead option now, down 4 and three quarters at 571, and 561 and a quarter, down 6 in the soft red and hard red, respectively. Live cattle futures finished the nearby August at $147 and a nickel, up 45 cents. The feeder cattle at $214.57 and a half, or $3.35 higher. And the lean hogs on the day at $79.95 on this Tuesday afternoon, finished 87.5 cents higher for 100 pounds. You can find all of our agricultural programming at willag.org. That's willag.org. We posted there not long after it airs on our radio stations, and within 15 to 20 minutes normally, and we posted in its entirety at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil for the day, up 62 cents at $52.82 a barrel in the crude. Ethanol futures, 5.5 cents lower to $1.60. The wholesale price of gasoline, down a penny and a tenth. That's $1.92.07. And heating oil or diesel fuel, a penny higher at $1.72 even. Natural gas at $2.84 and a tenth, down 2 3/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average around 78 points higher at 17,978 at this hour. The dollar down 0.208 at 96.79. And the gold futures are currently trading at $1,154.25 per troy ounce. They're down $1.25. The weather forecast says we'll see a 20% chance of rainfall tonight. That'll come before 8 in the evening, partly cloudy otherwise, a low of 60 degrees and a north wind at 8 to 13, gusting to 21. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high of 80. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy and a low of 61. And Thursday, partly sunny and a high of 81 degrees. Thursday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 70. And then things begin to settle out. Friday, partly sunny and 89. Friday night, partly cloudy and 71. Saturday, sunny and 90 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 72. Chance of rainfall back in the forecast by the time we get to sunny. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies and 89. And Sunday night, partly cloudy and 71. When we begin the work week, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny and 86 on Monday. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll check in with Don Dame. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
On this Tuesday, the 14th day of July, we're joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, to discuss what's been happening in the marketplace. Wayne, thanks for being with us today. I do appreciate that. It's been about the weather for quite some time in Chicago. However, today, things turned sharply lower eventually in the corn pit. What happened?
Well, I think a couple things happened. I think that, number one, we did have a big buildup with an anticipation of at least a 1% to 2% decrease in the corn ratings. We actually saw the excellent increase 1%, the good it stayed at 69, but a lot better crop ratings than what we thought. I think that's followed up by the little better forecast as we go into the end of the week. Like you know, you were just reading there, we don't have shots of rain again until Sunday, and fortunately, we don't start off with going much over 80 to start with, so we don't bake this ground into cement. So that being looked at, the number of days that we've been up and the number of somewhat weak longs with all of the new fund additions over the last couple weeks, basically we saw some consolidation today because of that. And then, of course, we lost the wheat sale to Russia and Romania, which helped pull the other grain, the wheat, down as we were looking at things here today. So then before the day was over, why, the beans slid on back just a little bit, just in sympathy.
So were we watching profit-taking in the corn pit then?
I think we saw some profit-taking there. I think we saw maybe just a lack of new buyers really feeding this market because the news wasn't really that positive when we looked at the ratings there yesterday. You would have felt it was sort of positive last night if you were sitting in Montgomery County, Indiana. Was the rain come through and the warnings of this and that and everything and hail falling and what's going on? But we lucked out again. We probably had 2 inches of rain, but we didn't have any of the destructive winds and stuff come along. A few hail claims being called in today from last night, but all in all, the way that weather looked coming across on the TV set and actually being out in a little bit, we were pretty lucky overnight.
You think the trade is built enough into the marketplace for the risk that's out there already in the field, or is there more yet to come?
I think that's going to depend a little bit on, number one, can we get this drier forecast to let us dry out a little bit, to get the rivers down to where we can actually transport some grain and assess what we have left in the fields. I think that we've got time to make some improvements. We've listened to Emerson Naffinger and, you know, listened to the Purdue tapes and looking and seeing and talking about if we could get some of this moisture to go away, we can have some recovery in these crops. But it's going to take mildly warm weather and drier weather to get this done. And if we can, you know, realize that forecast, I think then we'll reassess and maybe consolidate here for a while, maybe work down just a little bit. But we're not going to fall out of bed right now because there's just too much damaged corn and beans out there if we don't get that ideal weather.
What was up with the livestock market today? Just lower prices in the grains and they decided to rally a bit?
Well, the lower price in the grain sure didn't hurt anything, but I think also as we look at the cutout values, they're up 63 cents to $1.50 along that going, and we were quite a bit, the board was a lot cheaper than what the cash values were, so we had a discount to that. So I think we saw a little correction, number one, because of cheaper feed, and number two, because the cutout was doing a little better.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us on this Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural marketplace. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows that as of Sunday, 27% of the corn crop across the nation was silking. The average is normally 24%. The condition of the crop was said to be in 54% good and 15% excellent. That compares with 55 and 14 in the previous week. Soybeans emerged now stands at 96%. Normally at this time of year, it's 100%. 38% of the crop is blooming. The rolling five-year average is 37%. 6% of the crop is now setting pods. That's 1 percentage point behind average. In the condition of the crop, 50% good, 12% excellent. The previous week was 52 and 11, and last year by comparison 56 and 16. Again, 50% of the soybean crop in good condition this year, 12% excellent. Previous year, 56 and 16. Now here are the state statisticians with updates from their regions.
This is Aaron Cosgrove, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office. Reports of corn silking, soybean setting pods, and oats being harvested for grain were received. Activities for the week included cutting hay, cultivating, and applying herbicides. Unseasonably cool weather prevailed until the weekend, when much warmer and more humid air returned to the state. Morning low temperatures dipped to 45 degrees at Spencer on Tuesday, while daytime highs only reached the low 60s over parts of southeast Iowa on Wednesday. High temperatures reached 94 degrees at Spencer and Sioux City on Sunday the 12th. Temperatures for the week as a whole averaged 4.3 degrees below normal. Dry weather prevailed over most of the state until Saturday, when showers and thunderstorms dampened the southern one-half to two-thirds of the state. Weekly rain totals varied from only 0.04 of an inch at McGregor to over 5.5 inches at the Davenport Airport. The statewide average precipitation was 1.5 inches, almost 0.5 inch more than normal. 17% of the corn crop reached the silking stage, 2 days behind last year and 3 days behind the 5-year average. 82% of the corn crop was rated good to excellent. Soybeans blooming or beyond reached 40%. With some reports of soybean setting pods. This is Aaron Cosgrove reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Heartland Region, with the Illinois Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report. Cool and wet conditions continue to be a challenge for producers' field activities, and crops in some areas of the state are showing signs of stress. Statewide, precipitation averaged 2.7 inches. That's 1.92 inches above normal. The average temperature for the week was 70.6 degrees. That's 5.6 degrees below normal. Corn silking advanced to 55% compared to 57% last year and the 5-year average of 54%. 2% of the corn was in the dough stage. That's 10 points behind last year at this time. Corn condition was rated at 16% very poor to poor, 28% fair, and 56% good to excellent. Soybeans planted reached 96% complete, and soybeans emerged reached 94%. That compares to 100% for both last year and the 5-year average. 33% of the soybeans were blooming, compared to 47% last year and the average of 40%. Soybean setting pods at 2% is 8 percentage points behind last year at this time. Soybean condition was rated 20% very poor to poor, 32% fair, 48% good to excellent. Winter wheat harvest advanced to 83% complete, compared to 69% last week. That's the Illinois Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending July 12, 2015. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Heartland Region.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending July 12, 2015. Crop development remained well ahead of last year for soybeans and small grains for the week. During the week, high winds accompanying recent rains across parts of central Minnesota caused concern about lodging of small grains. Field activities for the week included spraying and harvesting hay and processing vegetables during the 5.3 days suitable for field work. 7% of Minnesota's corn acreage had begun to silk. That's 2 days ahead of last year, but 6 days behind the 5-year average. Corn condition rated 85% good to excellent. 63% of the soybean crop was blooming or beyond, almost 2 weeks ahead of last year and 11 days ahead of average. With 6% of soybean setting pods, conditions were rated 78% good to excellent. 37% of the spring wheat acreage was turning color. That's over 2 weeks ahead of the previous year. Spring wheat condition rated 84% good to excellent. That's up slightly from last week. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Janice Presbury with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending July 12, 2015. There is a momentary break in rainy weather, only for it to return with a fierce vengeance. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.94 to 6.36 inches, with a statewide average of 2.62 inches. Winter wheat was 58% harvested this week, compared to 73% last year and 82% five-year average. Soybeans blooming was 32% complete, compared to 51% last year and 40% five-year average. Corn silking was 27% complete, compared to 38% last year and 40% five-year average. Winter wheat harvest was delayed for many farmers by frequent rains, keeping the crop moisture high and fields too damp to support harvest equipment. The excess moisture, along with cooler temperatures, left some of the matured and harvested wheat sprouting and molding, as well as suffering from aflatoxin and vomit toxin. Delays in winter wheat harvest has put a damper on planting double-cropped soybeans. Brown stem root was present in several late-planted soybean fields. Many farmers were unable to apply nitrogen and much-needed fungicides on corn and soybeans, keeping both crops under 50% good to excellent condition. Similarly, reduced herbicide applications and increased rainfall has made weed control near impossible. A spike in flies, mosquitoes, and buffalo gnats have caused problems for some livestock. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending July 12, 2015. This is Janice Pressberry reporting.
This is Bob Greener with the USDA's Missouri Crop Progress Report for the week ending July 12th. Rainfall was recorded across all of Missouri again this past week, with some areas in the south receiving an excess of 5 inches. Localized flooding continued to be reported. 2.5 days were suitable for field work on average throughout the state. Temperatures were 5 degrees below normal on average, with the coolest temperatures in the northern parts of the state. Looking at the crops, 53% of corn had silked, 6 points behind the 5-year average for this time of year. Corn condition was rated 5% very poor, 11% poor, 32% fair, 44% good, and 8% excellent. Soybean planting was 80% complete, up 7 points for the previous week. 70% of soybeans were emerged compared to an average of 97%. 11% of soybeans were blooming, 11 points behind average. Soybean condition was rated 5% very poor, 15% poor, 48% fair, 29% good, and 3% excellent. Sorghum was 80% planted, 20 points behind average. 12% of sorghum was headed. Sorghum condition was rated 2% very poor, 9% poor, 50% fair, 35% good, and 4% excellent. Winter wheat was 79% harvested compared to an average of 97%. This is Bob Greener with the National Agricultural Statistics Service.
Our thanks to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the growing regions of the Midwest. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org. There's one quick agricultural news story for the day. The House Agriculture Committee today approved H.R. 1599, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015. If passed into law, it would clarify national food labeling regulations related to GMOs. 1599 does this in two ways. The Secretary of Agriculture may require that the labeling of a food produced from, containing, or consisting of a genetically engineered plant contain a statement to adequately inform consumers of a difference between the food so produced and its comparable food if the secretary determines that A, there is a material difference in the functional, nutritional, or compositional characteristics, allergenicity, or other attributes between the food so produced and its comparable food, and or B, the disclosure of such material difference is necessary to protect public health and safety or to prevent the label or labeling of the food so produced from being false or misleading in any particular. The Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015 was first introduced by representatives from Kansas and North Carolina. The legislation was amended through the efforts of Illinois Representative Rodney Davis.
Yeah, the substitute amendment actually gives the USDA jurisdiction to set up a voluntary labeling program similar to the organic program, where a national set of standards will be put in place that will let consumers know what does a non-GMO product mean when they see it on the label at the supermarket. This is going to be a process that's going to provide more transparency to every single family, every single father like me, every single mother who wants to ensure that their kids have a safe food supply and a cheap food supply in this country.
The Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act is supposed to provide clarity and stability in the marketplace through national uniform labeling. It is an effort to minimize state-to-state labeling differences. Steve Platt now joins us on the Closing Market Report. He's with Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois, to help us take a look at the agricultural energy market. Steve, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Tell me about crude oil and what it's done over the last several weeks.
Well, certainly today it was a big surprise, more so than most other days, in that we did have an agreement reached between the Iran and the Western powers on a nuclear disarmament package. The market initially did break and fell to as low as 50.88 on the August crude, and ended up rallying up to 50, close to 53 cents before settling, you know, a little bit lower than that. So the market actually closed higher today, even with that news, and it does suggest that a lot of the news was somewhat discounted. I still feel from a bearish posture is still dictated for this market. We saw this market break hard here since we last talked a month ago. We fell from over 61 to around $52, and did see the gasoline and heating oil also decline, but not as much. The major factor, I think, contributing to the gasoline here in terms of its steadiness was basically the better demand that we saw this summer in the U.S., which did help support the margins. I think overall you're still looking at a situation that is characterized by record high inventories, growing supplies coming both from OPEC and from non-OPEC producers such as Russia. Some of them are actually producing record high levels of supplies, which is helping to burden the market overall. I think the demand side is certainly still questionable. We've talked about China. That has come into play here with the volatility in their stock market and intervention by their government, which I think will draw some of the funding that they've had for some of their strategic purchases of crude oil here recently. The other factor that might need to be watched is certainly Iran looking to import or export more oil, and that could happen pretty quickly and lead to a surplus developing here on the order of about 1.5 million barrels per day, which I think will burn the market.
We have just maybe 20 seconds or so. How much more bearish would you get this marketplace?
Well, I'm not saying that we'll see the low 40s, but certainly what probably could be taken away from the market is the expectations of a quick rebound. I think the market probably will be more inclined to be trading between maybe as low as 48 on the downside and 55, and we could see that basically transpire for the next maybe as much as a year.
Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services, back in just 2 minutes.
It's Cow Appreciation Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1850, the refrigerated ice-making machine was first demonstrated by Dr. John Gorey, who eventually received a patent for the machine on May 6th of 1851. In 1857, Frederick Louis Maytag was born. An American industrialist, Maytag was one of the founders of a farm implement company in Newton, Iowa. that made threshing machines, band cutters, and self-feeder attachments. In 1907, the company began producing the Maytag washing machine to make up for the seasonal nature of the farm equipment business. The first machine, the Parsons Pastime, featured a hand-powered wood tub. In 1868, the first patent for a spring tape measure was issued to Alvin J. Fellows of New Haven, Connecticut. The tape measure was enclosed in a circular case with a spring click lock to hold the tape at any desired point. In 1943, George Washington Carver was honored with a national monument near his childhood home near Diamond Grove, Missouri. Carver was a prolific agricultural researcher, instructor, and chemical investigator. And in 1986, Raymond Lowry died, an American design engineer. He is known as the father of streamlining. Famous examples of his designs include the 1947 Studebaker Starlight Coupe and the Coca-Cola bottle. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check in with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, as an update of what's been happening. Let's start with the storms that moved across the Midwest yesterday. That was a really big and very well-organized storm that ran from, Minnesota all the way out down into Kentucky and Tennessee. Tell me about it.
Well, yeah, it was a very organized and large complex of showers and thunderstorms and big rain producers that allowed those showers and thunderstorms. That system now is going to affect portions of the mid-Atlantic with some thunderstorm activity over the next 24 hours. We're also going to see another complex of thunderstorms developing here over the next couple of days. It's going to really impact the western areas of the Corn Belt. Looks like Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and maybe the far northern reaches of Illinois and Indiana. Going to see some pretty good rains here over the next 48 hours.
Would that be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 inches? What kind of rainfall are we talking
about?
Well,
I think underneath the heavier showers and thunderstorms, you're probably looking at an inch, inch and a half, up to 2 inches in some areas. The winds aloft will carry this system along fairly quickly, so that may keep amounts down. But those are going to be the wet areas here in the short term. It'll be the western and northwest areas of the Corn Belt, and maybe not quite as wet over the rest of the Corn Belt, but there are still showers and thunderstorms in the forecast.
In the eastern part of the Corn Belt, we've been discussing and watching some of the changes in the patterns. Do you have any worries that will turn not only hot, but remain dry for in any extended period of time?
Well, I don't see that. I think that as we go and look now at the second half of July, that the trends that we're seeing is just not going to allow any persistent hot, dry weather anywhere in the nation's midsection. Will we have hot and dry periods? Yes, but they just don't look like they'll be able to go on for too long.
All right. Other places around the planet we need to check in on. Speaking of hot and dry, Europe and the Black Sea area have been suffering considerably.
Yeah, there's been a lot of heat and a lot of dryness, although a lot of the headlines for that heat and dryness a week ago have a lot of those areas that were hot have cooled off significantly, actually, and we're going to see many areas of northern and eastern Europe, including Russia, the UK, many areas of the far eastern areas, many areas of Russia are going to be looking at a cooler than normal trend and a chance of precipitation that are getting a little bit better. So the trend in Europe has cooled down some and also gotten a little more moist.
And do you have an update for us on the Chinese growing season?
Well, they've been active in terms of precipitation. They have been looking at a weather pattern that hasn't been unlike many areas here in North America, where they haven't necessarily had any real hot, dry stretches, and we expect that trend to continue.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.